MDRadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know that you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike. And folks, today's show, you've got to share this with friends. We've got some great information. This is something that as a chef and a cardiologist is near and dear to my heart. We're going to be talking about cholesterol. We're going to be busting some myths with Johnny Bowden, who is the nutrition myth buster. He's nationally known, board certified nutritionist, expert on diet and weight loss. You may have seen him on the Dr. Oz show, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS. You may have read some of his quotes in the New York Times, Forbes, Daily Beast, Huffington Post, and the list goes on and on. He's author of over 14 books, including the 150th Healthiest Foods on Earth, Living the Low Carb, et cetera, et cetera. If I was to read all his accolades, we'd be out of time. So, Johnny, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you. What a great pleasure to be on with you.
So, as I mentioned in the promo, this is near and dear to my heart because, you know, my book, and I've been speaking as a cardiologist for years about the cholesterol myth. And for my aspect, you know, folks will come to me and say, well, you know, I can't have an egg, or my doctor said I can't have a steak because cholesterol. And you would see these horrible processed foods that people would be buying because they advertised, you know, no cholesterol, cholesterol free. And, you know, they were leading themselves down, you know, a path of not only poor health, but misery. So educate us. What is the cholesterol myth?
Well, it's so nice. First, let me just say how nice it is to actually speak to a fellow traveler on this path. for people who are listening, you may not really be able to comprehend the kind of heat that people like Dr. Mike and I take for taking on the establishment on this. I mean, these kinds of theories, high cholesterol causes heart disease, don't eat saturated fat because it clogs your arteries, we all need carbs for energy. All of this stuff they're almost like cultural memes. They are so embedded that to question them is kind of like questioning whether the world is round or not. And you know, they asked me on Dr. Oz, well, you know, why do so many people still believe this? And I said to him, you know, I can't answer that. There was a time in the world's history when the greatest scientific minds on the planet all believed the world was flat. I mean, we get it wrong sometimes, and we've gotten it wrong on cholesterol. And I,
and not only that,
Dr. Mike, I'm not even sure that you and I are going to be alive to see the sea change that will happen. There's no question. But when
you bring this up, and I just got to share this with you. A recent, like 2 weeks ago, a study came out that showed 54% of physicians still thought that you had to restrict dietary cholesterol. Now, even the guidelines finally in 2016 changed, but you know, you really hit it on the head. You know, there's just this sort of inertia to new knowledge. And I tell you, man, the hardest lecture I gave a medical grand rounds on red meat, saturated fat, and the risk of cardiovascular disease. And you could have heard a pin drop when I finished there. But what we did was we laid it out. You know, the science is there, and that's, I think that's a frustrating thing to me is, you know, somebody who sat in a lab and done NIH research, the things you're talking about, I mean, the science is there. We just have to go out there and get it. And like you, I'm not exactly sure. Is it politics? Is it bad judgment? Maybe both. And there's certainly some bad science, you know, on that end. But it's become, I love your description, a cultural meme. What do we do?
It's a tough one. You know, I too have given talks and you know, certainly I get feedback from the website and from Facebook and all this, and it kind of falls into two categories. I get letters from doctors to say, thank you for opening my eyes. You have changed my practice. I get letters like that, and I get letters like, you quacks, how are you? You're killing people. If people follow your advice and get off a statin drug, they're going to die. They kind of fall into those two categories, and people are very polar, much like in our political atmosphere. They're just very polarized on this issue. And understandably, because it really does, if we're right, which we are, then half of the underpinnings of the whole American medical establishment fall apart. Listen, think of it this way. Why, everyone who's listening to this, ask yourself this thought question. Why have you been told to avoid saturated fat? The answer is going to be, I'm guessing if we were doing this live, everybody's hand would go up. And the answer is because it raises your cholesterol. Right. Now, why do we care about that? Because cholesterol causes heart disease. Well, if that's not true, then the dietary recommendations of the last 40 years, which has made our country fat, sick, tired, and depressed, and in the midst of an epidemic of diabetes and obesity, then those dietary guidelines crumble like a house of dominoes, because they're all based on the fear of cholesterol in the blood, which is all based on the incorrect notion that cholesterol in the blood has anything to do with heart disease.
Well, that's, you're exactly right. And all that stems, you know, back from Ansel Keys and the seven countries study, which I believe there were like 21 or 23 countries, but they just left those out that didn't make sense with their hypothesis. Exactly. Well, I mean, we rediscovered it in the 90s as the French paradox, but it was there all along.
Yeah, you know, you and I live in this world, and I think sometimes we assume that people know what we're talking about when we say these things. Let me give the 15 seconds.
Absolutely.
What Dr. Mike is talking about when he's talking about Ansel Keys and the seven countries, he's talking about a lot of research that has been the underpinning of this theory. And as you know, Dr. Mike, only recently, and this was in the last year or so, these papers came out in even JAMA showing that the sugar industry literally funded this research and funded lobbying efforts to take the attention off of sugar and focus it on fat. This was a politically motivated and lobbyist-driven attempt to take our eye off the ball of sugar. And only now is that becoming clearer. And the day is in. They actually paid people. They paid Ansel Keys, all of these people who are probably unknown to your listeners, who were big movers and shakers in getting these guidelines set up so that we would blame fat for everything, so that we would start a low-fat business. And now we have a $31 billion a year business in lowering cholesterol. And guess what? These guys don't want to change. This is a very, very lucrative business for a lot of people. And I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm not saying these doctors who still think you shouldn't be eating cholesterol are badly motivated. They don't have time. They're overwhelmed. They don't have time to read the research. The pharmaceutical companies are nipping at their heels with incentives and honorariums and, scientific advisory positions. And it's just like Washington. It's a big bloated industry based on the wrong information. Cholesterol doesn't cause heart disease. It's a very valuable molecule that's needed for the brain, needed for the immune system, needed for thinking, needed to make your sex hormones, needed to make your vitamin D. We need cholesterol, and the more we focus on lowering it, the less attention we pay to the real causes of heart disease and the things we can actually do something about.
Well, and you know, to follow up on your comment, folks, if you're listening, I want you to get to your computer and look up John Yudkin. And I write about Professor Yudkin in my book, Fallacy of Castle, because he, exactly what you said, he proposed what we are talking about in terms of the sugars and the simple carbohydrates way back in the late 60s and 70s. And he was railroaded essentially, you know, out of business. He was a professor. I believe it was either Cambridge or Oxford. I can't quite remember. I think it was Oxford. But he was actually professor of nutrition at that university, at that institute. And he was, as you said, politically motivated, kind of run completely out of business. And you mentioned something else. You hear everybody talking today about, oh, you got to get more vitamin D, you got to get more vitamin D. The precursor in our bodies, right, 7-deoxy hydrocholesterol is the precursor to vitamin D. And I got to share a little story with you, Johnny, because one of the things that got me thinking about this many, many years ago as a cardiologist was when the statin medications first came out. And you can go back and look at the original trials. One of the fascinating things was, and it's been proven in several subsequent trials since, was that you saw a reduction in the incidence of cardiac events when people were put on a statin when they got it the day they came in the hospital versus, you know, if they were discharged 3 or 4 days later and then started on it when they went home. Now, that is not enough time for those medications to affect the circulating cholesterol levels.
Right.
Clearly not. It takes weeks. But yeah. What it does do
is... I know where you're going.
It keys into one of the things that impressed the hell out of me that nobody ever talked about was, hey, it's an anti-inflammatory. And now we can see how shifting with our diet in certain ways promotes an anti-inflammatory state. That's, you know, essentially what you're trying to get through medications.
Yes. And may I add something to that?
So please do.
You are absolutely right. Absolutely right. 100%. The only benefit, as far as I can see, of statin drugs, and we, you know, Steve and I were accused of being anti-statins. We're not. We're anti-overprescription of statins. Statins have a mild beneficial effect in a certain population, which is middle-aged men with previous heart attacks, with previous heart disease. And we believe that whatever modest good statin drugs do, they do not do it by lowering cholesterol, as you just pointed out. They do it because they're mildly anti-inflammatory. Now, two things to say about this. Number one, you can inflammation, without question, in my view, is one of the four major promoters of heart disease. That's what we should be looking at. Statin drugs are mildly anti-inflammatory, but they have lots of side effects. You can reduce inflammation with natural substances much more effectively than statin drugs do it, and you can do it without any side effects except beneficial ones. For example, fish oil will reduce inflammation as well or better than a statin drug. It has no side effects unless you consider lowering triglycerides and lowering blood pressure and lowering to be side effects. This is a very powerful way to do it. And here's what the pharmaceutical industry is doing now. And so please be aware of this. I consult with a lot of companies in the natural products industry. I see this coming. They are trying to medicalize the condition of inflammation so that we won't even be able to tell people like who are listening to this show that fish oil lowers inflammation because it will now become a disease claim. So they are literally trying to medicalize things like insomnia, so we won't be able to talk about melatonin, inflammation, so we won't be able to talk about things like fish oil. And so see that coming. The statin drugs have lots of side effects. They are wildly overprescribed for populations who don't benefit from them. And their mechanism is basically has very little to do. They lower cholesterol very well. They don't reduce heart disease very well. And we can lower inflammation.
As a cardiologist, I could tell you, during my training and then, subsequently, what we do is we try to measure the effectiveness of the statin by measuring a number. And that number that we focus on is the LDL cholesterol.
It does that very well. It does that wonderfully. It just doesn't lower cholesterol.
But that may not be the mechanism by which you are seeing the beneficial effect. And as we talked about in those first studies, it's that reduction of inflammation. And, folks can eat a diet that is, absolutely delicious, fantastic, and will provide you a lot of that anti-inflammatory benefit in choosing the products and the foods and things that we eat more carefully. And then, as you said, another thing that folks don't mention is a lot of these drugs are not cheap, right? I mean, how much do you think people spend a year on medications like that?
I don't know. I don't follow medical economics as much as I probably should, but I have read different estimates of this. The amount we spend on these things are ridiculous. And no one would, if we were paying for it ourselves, we would be looking at it with a much more careful eye. We'd say, wait a minute, I don't understand. Wait. You mean half the people who go into hospitals for cardiovascular events have normal cholesterol? Well, why am I paying all this money to lower my cholesterol? Well, wait a minute. You mean that Tim Russett died on the treadmill at NBC with perfectly normal cholesterol? Oh, I don't understand. Well, then why am I paying this? But because our doctor says it and the insurance pays for it, we just take it without realizing that it's not. Not only is it not doing us much good, it may be doing us some harm. So, and let me give you another example. This is kind of interesting of how much this has seeped into our culture. There's a product I like, by far not the only one that I think is beneficial for heart health, but one of them, citrus bergamot. It's an extract from a fruit in Italy, that's grown in Italy, and it has several very important benefits for the heart. It lowers triglycerides, it raises HDL cholesterol, and it lowers inflammation. These are really important things for the heart, right? They name the product Cholesterol Support because they recognize that people are so, they so associate cholesterol with heart health that that's the only thing they're looking for. So even though this does support healthy cholesterol levels in the way of lowering the inflammatory LDL-B particles, it needed to be branded as Cholesterol Support in order to have people recognize how valuable this is for the heart. They couldn't just say, hey, this lowers triglycerides. People say, well, what does that do? Well, it raises your HDL. Well, yeah, so, you know, that, so what? It lowers inflammation. Well, what's that? So, of course, they call it Cholesterol Support, but really it's heart health support. And citrus bergamot's just one of the many examples of this. I get calls all the time or questions all the time. Well, what do you think? What's the best product to get? What's the best red rice yeast product on the market? I need to lower my... And I go, wait a minute, you're asking the wrong question. You're asking the wrong question. And also, Mike, and you didn't address this yet, and I'd love to hear your comments on this. We are measuring cholesterol by a 1950s test. We're measuring it in terms of two large gross categories, good, and I use air quotes here, and bad. It's obsolete. We now know that there's five different kinds of HDL. There's HDL-2 and 2A and 2B. There's LDL-A and LDL-B. They behave differently in the body. All LDL isn't necessarily bad. All HDL, there's some HDL that's actually inflammatory. So the newer tests, correct, newer meaning at least a decade old, are called the particle tests, and that will actually give you some interesting and useful information about what's going on with cholesterol. LDL-A, for example, which is in the category of bad cholesterol, but if you look at it under a microscope, it's a cotton ball, and it does no damage. LDL-B, a different kind of LDL, is a nasty little atherogenic inflammatory particle. So you need to know what kind of LDL you have. It's not enough for your doctor to say, oh, your LDL is 100, let's give you a statin drug. And one more thing I think that really bears mentioning, and I'd love your opinion on this, Dr. Mike, we're measuring cholesterol in an obsolete way. We're still dividing it into these two gross categories, HDL, the good kind, and LDL, the bad kind, and people are prescribing drugs based on a total LDL number. We now know that there's like five different kinds of HDL. There's HDL-2 and 2A and 2B, and there's LDL-A and LDL-B. And these actually act very differently in the body. And the more modern tests, and by modern, I mean at least a decade old, are called the particle tests. And they actually look at what kind of LDL you have. It's not enough to say your LDL is X. Is 100 or 130, we need to know how much of it is the one that looks like a cotton ball, which is LDL-A, which doesn't do any damage at all, and how much of it is the LDL-B, which looks like a little BB gun pellet and is a nasty little molecule that we want to reduce. So, and there's ways to change those distributions with diet and supplements. So we're not only we're doing a double whammy on ourselves. Number one, we're chasing the wrong molecule. We're chasing lower and lower cholesterol numbers, which is not what we should be concentrating on to reduce the risk of heart disease. And number two, we're not even measuring that damn molecule in the right way. We're still looking at obsolete tests that measure HDL and LDL instead of LDL-A versus LDL-B and HDL-2A versus HDL-2B. And that test can be gotten so easily by any doctor, as you know, under $100. It's called the particle test. And if God knows, if you're going to get a prescription to lower your cholesterol from your doctor, make sure they're looking at the newer tests and not the old ones. Do you agree?
Oh, that's absolutely spot on. What people don't realize, because we say cholesterol causes absolutely no problem in the body unless it is oxidized. The oxidized cholesterol is the result of inflammation. The LDL pattern that you're talking about, the B pattern, or sometimes called the small, dense LDL particle size pattern, is associated with the development of inflammation. People who have diabetes, an inflammatory disease, not a problem with the pancreas, a systemic inflammatory disease, tend to have this dense, small LDL pattern, hence the association, the 50% increased risk of developing another inflammatory disease, heart disease, et cetera, et cetera. So you are singing my song, brother. Absolutely, I think, spot on. And
it's great to hear that from a cardiologist.
Point, and that's what I talk about in the fallacy of the calorie, that with this modern Western diet that you alluded to with the high sugar content, et cetera, that is systemically pro-inflammatory. And hence, this is why we are, you know, dealing with all the problems that we're dealing with. If we look at ancient diets, if we look at other more healthful diets that are absolutely delicious. Let me tell you, the French eat pretty well. You know, a classic French cuisine as a chef, that's some darn good food. When we looked in the 90s, their rate of cardiovascular disease, you know, was 50% of what the risk was in the United States. And the interesting thing, the healthiest place in France was where they ate the most foie gras. Talk about your saturated fat, right?
Here's what's interesting. They used to call the phenomena that Dr. Mike is referring to the French paradox. Why do they call it that? Because they said, well, it's a paradox. They eat all this saturated fat and they don't get heart disease. Well, it's only a paradox if you can't give up the notion that saturated fat causes heart disease. It's not a paradox at all. Nobody ever, if you can give up that belief system, then all of a sudden the paradox disappears. Of course they ate more saturated fat and they don't have more heart disease. Why would you think they would? Unless you believe that cholesterol and saturated fat cause heart disease, which they don't.
It's a lot. And what I talk about and speak a lot about is that the foods that we eat affect our gut microbiome. And by affecting our gut microbiome, you change the characteristic, the composition, the quality of those types of bacteria. And that the way to the heart is literally through the stomach. And that's where you set off all this inflammation. And, I think when you eat wholesome, authentic, natural foods, what this gut microbiome over millions of years has co-evolved to co-metabolize with us, as you said, that's a natural and delicious way to lower your inflammatory risk. So, John, what other things can folks do naturally to lower their risk?
Here's the two interesting facts I'd love to get in. Saturated fat, and this is published research in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition by a researcher named Dreon, if anyone wants to look it up. Saturated fat changes the particle distribution of your LDL. So when you eat more saturated fat, you have more LDL-A, the kind that doesn't matter, and less LDL-B, that pattern you were talking about. And the second thing that is interesting, speaking of paradoxes, is a lot of people don't know what's called the Israeli paradox. Well, you know what that is? That's another paradox where they say, oh, my God, these guys eat so much vegetable oil, and they have so much heart disease. We don't understand it. It's a paradox because we all know that vegetable oil is good for heart disease. No, it's not. It's very pro-inflammatory. There's no paradox at all. We've been operating under the wrong set of assumptions. You know, look, here's something people can understand very
quickly.
We just had a political war in this country, an election, and the polls got everything wrong. And everybody's scratching their heads and going, I don't understand it. How did all the polls get it wrong? Because they made the wrong assumptions. They made assumptions about the demographics. They made assumptions about how people would fall into line. They made assumptions about whether the people they were reaching on phones were really representative of the population or not. When you make the wrong assumptions, your actions often are the wrong actions to take. And we made the assumption that vegetable oil is good for heart disease. It's not. And saturated fat is bad. It's not. And of course, we keep getting these quote-unquote paradoxical results because the assumptions are wrong.
Yeah, it seems common sense that if you have all these paradoxes, then what you really need to do is go back and examine the original hypothesis. And, you know, what I try to do, you know, in the book before my last one, was let the data lead me instead of, as you said, so much, you know, political capital is spent and research dollars by people protecting and crafting the data to fit their hypothesis instead of letting the data and the exploration, you know, carry us to what we really want to examine.
It's so true. And what a lot of people who are not in the field don't understand, and I so sympathize with them. My heart goes out to them. I meet them at workshops. I meet them at my dinner table. I mean, for God's sake, we're not all nutritionists or doctors, so we read what we read in CNN and the New York Times. We hear this stuff, and of course they're wondering, why is it so much confusion? Why don't these guys agree? So if we go back to the data, data is just a lot of numbers. It needs someone to interpret it. You can make a case for something being great by just choosing data that supports that. You can make a case for that very same thing being detrimental by there's other data you can choose to support that. So it always requires an interpretation. And unfortunately, those interpretations aren't really objective because they're very motivated. When you have a $31 billion a year industry devoted to lowering cholesterol, guess what? It colors your interpretation of the data.
Absolutely, you know, correct. And you know, part of that too that folks don't realize is you have maybe, I think you said $31 billion, for example, on one side. But when your solution is, hey, get some real food and eat natural, delicious, you know, authentic food. Your lobbying dollars, the support for, promoting that type of message.
There's no wild salmon lobby, you know, in Washington. So you would ask.
Yeah,
about
poor Brussels sprouts have nobody in their corner.
Yeah, not a big PR agency for Brussels sprouts. So, you know, you would ask to sum up some things people can do to lower the risk of heart disease. So, first of all, an anti-inflammatory diet, the foods that in my book, The 150 Healthiest Foods on Earth, I talk about, you know, the natural anti-inflammatories and antioxidants that are in foods. And I'm not advocating for a vegetarian diet. I eat tons of, you know, grass-fed meat and wild salmon, but the food has to be clean without all of the toxins and steroids and antibiotics that are frequently found in fat, or they're always found in factory-farmed meat. Those things are doing us damage, not the fat. Having a relaxing walk, spending time with friends, lowering your stress, which is one of the four major promoters of heart disease, with some deep breathing or like I said, a short walk around the block, anything that kind of calms your brain waves and your circulation and lowers your blood pressure, relationships, great supplements like omega-3s, magnesium, vitamin D, probiotics for the microbiome. I love citrus bergamot, cholesterol support, that product, because it sort of does a triple whammy of lowering triglycerides and raising HDL and lowering inflammation and blood sugar. Did I mention vitamin D? I did. Vitamin K. Important.
You know, we've covered so much, and there's still so much more to talk about. We've got to have you back on the show.
I want to
thank you so much for getting your message out there. And folks, join us down the road for part two. But until then, may the only pain in your life be champagne.